Hello, and welcome to NARC, Narcissistic Abuse Recovery Collaborators, home to NARC Troopers. If you enjoy today's episode, please check me out at narctroopers.com, where you're going to find over 200 scholarly articles and about the subject of recovery from relationships with Cluster B disordered people. And you're going to find a podcast channel like this with over 200 episodes and even a YouTube video vlog and a bunch of other stuff. So it's your go-to location. Most of it's all just free to watch and read. And if you do want a one-on-one with me, that's the only thing that I do for a small, highly reduced fee so that I can be a resource for everyone and make it really super affordable. And that one piece is the only thing that I do. And that just really covers my cost of operations to keep my website and to keep things going, spreading the word about narcissism. So there was a song that came out in the early 2000s. Kind of close to the time that I met my ex-husband, who was the narcissist that I was married to for 15 years, in a relationship with for 16 years. And that song was I Would Follow You Into the Dark. Y'all should check that out online, that song. Great song, I Will Follow You Into the Dark. You know, but that's the title, the topic of today's episode. And I just want to say that, you know, for the narcissist, you know, they're not going to do that. And they're not going to follow you anywhere. Once you become inconvenient, then you're toast. So some of the lyrics of that song, it says, love of mine, someday you will die, but I'll be close behind. I'll follow you into the dark. No blinding light or tunnels to gates of white, just our hands clasped so tight, waiting for the hint of a spark. Heaven and hell decide that they both are justified, and illuminate both the numbers on their vacancy sign. But if there's no one beside you when your soul departs, then I will follow you into the dark. That's Death Cab for Cutie. Yeah, Death Cab for Cutie. So recently, as I was sitting in the retina specialist waiting room, awaiting the newest verdict on my vision, to see how well my vision is holding up, I have Stargardt. Retinal disease. It's a genetic hereditary disorder. You know, and I'm not thinking about that. I'm thinking about my husband with NPD, wondering what he's gonna think about it. So instead of thinking, I'm, you know, probably in some ways going blind, I'm not even thinking about that. I'm thinking, I wonder how he's gonna take this, which is, you know, pretty much standard behavior of someone who's in these relationships. You're always thinking about them and how they're going to react to something, or what they're going to do in response to something, instead of worrying about what you should be worrying about, which is yourself. So, you know, I've been told that it's good to feel your feelings and to allow them to just sort of flow through you instead of trying to repress them or deny them. So when these times come, I try to just lie down on the wave of whatever it is, this wave of bad news or whatever, and body surf my way to shore. That's what I try to do. Just go with the flow. I remember how much I loved it when I would enter a dark movie theater and it would just be so dark. Part of my eye disease is I have night blindness. I can't see anything in the dark. And he would reach for my hand. And, it was a lifesaver. It was so comforting, such a relief to know that I could hold on to him and that I could be okay and be safe. In the end, after 16 long years with him, he said, "I'm tired of taking care of you and always, needing to be your eyes. I don't want to take care of you anymore." That's what he said on the day he left, unexpectedly out of the blue. So I wonder sometimes, what if things were flipped? What if it was him who suffered a genetic eye disease that would someday make him too blind to drive or to see all the beauty of the world? He's an artist. So how could he do his art without his vision? And I'm a writer and a teacher. And so, it's going to be hard for me to continue with my work at some point with my low vision. There's challenges all over the place. And so, it's kind of like we need eyes. And sure, there's accommodations that can be made to keep things going. But, even with all that, as creatives, we both need to have some vision. So I know that it would have broken my heart to watch if the lights had faded for him. What would have been my response to the news that was happening to him if it were flipped, and it was my husband who had had some health condition like that that was increasing and limiting him in these different ways? Well, I've thought about that, and I think that I would have, I would take him to see all the most beautiful places in the world and show them to him while he still had enough vision to see them. I would, hold that hand of his, and together we would witness the most glorious things, colorful, amazing beauty, perfect sunsets over the Pacific, ice caverns in that place in Iceland that everybody's going now, the wildlife, in the Galapagos, maybe Machu Picchu in Peru, and the Cinque Terre coast in Italy on the Mediterranean, and the twinkling amber lights in the sidewalk cafes of Paris and Florence. And I would want to give him all of that and more while he could still see and enjoy it and try to capture those pictures in his mind's eye so that he would have that as his vision faded. I would want to experience that with him and provide that for him. I would want him to have that, even without me. I would want him to just go have that. I would think of all the ways that I could to fill his world with color and images and brilliance. Now, I think I would prepare a beautiful meal for him, bursting with color, bright red cherries and pomegranate seeds, deep orange squash and verdant green leafy things, bright yellow lemons like the sun, and beautiful, perfect desserts decorated with the most intricate detail and simple, pure beauty presented on a plate, with all these colors and It would just be like seashells and sunsets on a plate for him to eat, And in addition to all that, we would go to endless art galleries and museums of the world and, ones that we had never visited yet. We would linger in our favorite museums like the Louvre, and we would see everything and just soak it in, drink it in, and then go see more. We would find a way to see the last Da Vinci that was last on his list, even though I think it's in Russia. We would look at all the most beautiful paintings and architecture and churches, and we would go back to Sainte-Chapelle in Paris to see the beautiful stained glass that just goes from the ceiling to the floor all around you in this church. We would go there one last time. And that was the beauty. And the thing I'm so grateful for is that during our marriage, we were both teachers and we had summers off and we traveled extensively. I thought we had built a great life together. We had a home that we had purchased and we had rehabbed it and worked so hard to make it fit all of our needs. And we made it green and put solar panels on it and the whole thing. We had a charger in the garage to charge the electric car. We had all that. We had all these trips all over the world. We went to all those places in Europe and all over the United States. We went out to eat in a great restaurant on the weekends. And, we had a great life. And for the most people, I think that that would have been enough. But of course, a person with NPD can never, ever just be satisfied with that. At some point, they're going to need to discard you, to individuate after parentifying you, and actually, y'all doing that both to each other. There's just this cycle that happens, and just being happy with having a beautiful life and a beautiful home and great jobs and all of that is just not enough. We could have been billionaires and gone to the moon, and that would not have been good enough. And so anyway, if he were going blind, that's what I would do for him. We would lay in bed and gaze through the open windows at the Eiffel Tower as it twinkled in the night. And we would try to burn that image into his permanent brain so that, when he could summon it when the dark days came and he couldn't see anymore. We would memorize every inch of each other's bodies and rejoice in knowing that we would not need eyes to feel touch and to feel all the powerful sensations magnified in the dark. He wouldn't have to be afraid, because I would be right there with him, to touch him, to hold him, to comfort him. When the eyes don't work, other parts of the body compensate and amplify to make up for it. So I would have done all that for him, and I would have reassured him that it wouldn't be the end of the world, and I would fill his life with as much of those other colorful things and images as I could until the day came where he couldn't see. I would help him learn how to become a low vision person, to help him, maybe if he got a seeing eye dog, or sit beside him and learn Braille or new accessibility tech. I'd do it with him, kind of like the partner of a deaf person learns to, learns to speak with their hands, right? I would do all of that. And, I really would do all those things. And I would do it bravely and willingly, because my heart would hurt for his loss, and I would want his life to remain as full and satisfying as it was before that he lost his vision. But we would go to the grocery store and practice touching everything to help him when he can't when he needs that skill for future grocery shopping after he can't see, maybe we could both blindfold ourselves and walk around the house with learning where everything is that way, and like simple little things like how does one trim your toenails if you're blind? How do you put eyeliner on for makeup? Well, that wouldn't be his problem. That's something I've worried about. But, we would problem solve all of those things. And, and then we would just practice and have questions and curiosities and all of these heartfelt efforts to keep the connection strong. And I would just want to support him every way that I could, all of the things that I could do and cram into the time that he had left, the weeks, the months, maybe a couple of years, while he still had enough vision to see beautiful artwork and sculptures and tides coming in with the pastel skies that turned to crimson and orange and purple, and at sunset where that's the color of fire and the sky, with the flowers and the birds and the stars and all of it, I would want that for him. We would savor every moment as if it was the last time we were ever going to see it. And I would do it gladly, with love, with commitment and devotion and compassion, and most of all, with empathy. I would want to give him that gift to hold in his mind's eye when his eye could no longer see them anymore. And, it would give me great satisfaction to be able to do that for him. And through it all, I would be right there, letting him know that I would always have that guiding hand there for him, this unconditional love. I would be that sanctuary in the storm, protection, his halcyon. Losing his vision would not diminish his worth in my eyes or change who he was or what I loved about him. But this is all just silly that I'm thinking about what I would have done for him. He could not do that for me. And as time passed and years went by, he began to turn away when I stumbled over things or when I had to reach for him. As we navigated through crowds at concerts and through these countries all over the world, his heart did not feel for my loss. He did not feel the love and compassion and empathy that would compel him to want to shelter me, to take care of me, and to provide me with the best life that he could under the circumstances. Devotion to one's wife would seem to motivate those feelings and those actions, but they were absent in him. He could just coldly turn away, leaving me stranded in the darkest of places, and walk towards something carefree and exciting without ever giving me a second thought. He could abandon me and erase me, delete me, with no feelings of remorse or accountability. And he did. That's exactly what he did. So there I sat in the retina specialist waiting room, waiting to hear the verdict about how much longer I should be able to drive and, before I have to start depending on the kindness of strangers to get where I want to go or spend an incredible amount of money on Ubers or deal with public transportation during a time of COVID and other kinds of illnesses and stuff. How am I gonna get to the beach? I will always be able to enjoy the sensory experience that happens near the waves, to hear them crash and the seagulls cry and all of that, the white foam tickling my toes and the wind, in my hair, the sand beneath my feet, cold and wet, and it's a hazy blue veil that meets the land. I can probably always at least make that out, that much of it. I have more time, but it's uncertain. I have a very narrow line of central vision still left, and the doctor told me that things will like a good diet and lots of sleep and rest and low stress and exercise and lots of water and healthy living and all that, yada, 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 could prolong the disease damage and stave off further loss of vision. That's a tall order for someone with trauma-induced PTSD, insomnia, and some wicked panic attacks and anxiety following this discard that happened over 3 years ago. Of course, I'm greatly improved over these past 3 years, but that last 10-20% of the journey towards just letting them go and letting yourself be whole and just accepting it all, you know, that last stretch is, for lack of better words, it's a bitch. It's funny how when I got the news that I had Stargardt disease and what that meant, that my primary thought was that I didn't know how to tell him. I sat in my car outside the doctor's office. This was about 7 years ago, and I just wept. I cried for my eyes that will invariably continue to get worse, but I mostly cried for him because I didn't want to be a burden. I didn't want to slow him down. I didn't want to compromise our beautiful lifestyle. I didn't want to hold him back. I didn't want him to love me less because I was unable to see as well as other people. Looking back on that, it's ironic that he never really loved me at all. So I was being quite silly worrying about losing any of it. He was just role-playing and it was just fiction, and it was just a beautiful, magical fantasy bubble that he had constructed, that he created for a little while. Like so much of his art, in the end, he ruined it. He self-sabotaged it and destroyed it, and he ended up with nothing. I don't know I don't know that. I didn't know that that was going to happen to me, that he was going to do this. So anyway, here's the moral to the story. The cautionary tale that I want to share. It goes like this. If you fall in love with the wrong person who has a cluster B personality disorder, and if you step into that fantasy and believe that you have found the pot of gold at the end of the rainbow, all I can tell you is that in the end, you will have nothing and you will be alone. And if you get sick or suffer any disability, you will have to do it alone. They will not want to be any part of that. They will leave you when you need them the most. None of us know how long we will be able-bodied, or even alive, for that matter. Each day could be our last. My vision could hang on for another 10 years or longer until after my body has surrendered for other reasons that, you know, take me out of the game. I could outlive and outlast my husband, who believed that I was of no use to him any longer. We could all perish next week or next month. These are uncertain times and getting crazier every day. So we can't love someone just when it's convenient or easy or fate is smiling upon you both. And a person with narcissistic personality disorder cannot love you at all. It can look like love, feel like it, and it can seem so very real, but it's not. So be careful. You know you saw those red flags. I saw them too. Don't ignore them. Don't be stubborn or arrogant or so starstruck with so many stars in your eyes that you're blinded by them. I guess I was blind all those years, so it's only fitting that I end up actually being blind in real time. I wanted to believe it was real so very badly. I had never had what he offered me. He was everything I ever wanted, all wrapped up in one pretty box with ribbons and bows and sparklers and confetti. I have never had a husband or a person in my life who seemed to be so perfect. So when all those red flags went up, and it happened pretty quick, there were so very many. But you know what? No matter how big they were, no matter how impossible it was not to see them, I refused to acknowledge them. And I bet you did too. Please don't do that. They even try to tell you themselves in the beginning. They warn you. They let you know that you are dealing with something dangerous, and it's just so hard to believe that what they're saying could be true and that it could be that cold-hearted. The price for ignoring these warnings are way too high. Don't be as blind as me. My refusal to see the signs caused me to lose everything that ever mattered to me. The gut feeling that you are in the dangerous waters and hostile territory, but it's so seductive. And you are so thirsty and hungry for love. Take back your power and resist. There will come a time when it will be too late to save yourself or anyone else for that matter. Don't let that happen to you. Don't waste years and even decades of your life to get nothing in return. When the lights go out, I will be alone, and no one will take my hand. No one will follow me into the dark. Don't let that happen to you. Okay, thanks for listening, NARC troopers, narcissistic abuse recovery collaborators. I'm going to change that. Narcissistic abuse recovery citizens. We are citizens of our own tribal group, and that group is one that is, we have a common bond, don't we? So let's hang on there, keep going, and do the right thing, even if it is really hard. You'll be glad you did later. Okay, much love. Bye.
In only 2 days, you can move your career further, faster with a Harvard DCE Professional and Executive Development Program. Advance your leadership skills, craft smarter business strategies, build your network, and move your career in the right direction. You'll earn a certificate of completion, add Harvard to your CV, and become the leader you want to be. Our intensive programs are designed to fit into your busy schedule. Attend online or on the Harvard campus. Search Harvard Professional and Executive Development to learn more.